And action.
Hello, I'm Lionel. I'm an experimental software artist. I'm also known as an artist named Ukodia. I started when I was 5 years old playing video games, and that's how I got into making software. But lo and behold, I have never made a video game since. I got into software for many years and at some point discovered creative coding, and that was very eye-opening for me, very empowering. I didn't feel I could use my hands to make art, but all of a sudden code became like a paintbrush. And so 10 years ago, I started doing creative coding and got into all kinds of different creative applications and realized at some point I was making my own video game. In 2023, I left my software engineer career of 15 years to become and explore fully what it is like to be a software artist, and started with building a 3D catalog of motion called Mycolog, which uses photogrammetry to create 3D realistic models of mushrooms instead of having static pictures to be able to help people to learn about mushroom and identification in the wild. Since last year, when I joined the AI community, I've been working with Chris Krug and different AI community members like Philippe Pasquier from SFU Meta Creation Lab. Curiously, I started building some interactive application with AI, exploring new ways of interacting with AI. For example, CompoVision is an application that allows you to generate images with AI without using a single word, but instead using your hands and objects that are around you, and it's able to create what you can imagine without any words. And it's been incredibly fun and a very big source of inspiration and exploration for me.
Those of you who've been around here have probably met Lionel. He's so cool, but I don't want to actually focus on Lionel right this second. You just got that. I want to focus on Victor. Victor's been coming to these events for 16 months now. We actually didn't know each other. We didn't know each other before we got started. And he's made little reels of every single month's recap that we share. And he started getting into these documentaries. That's like the sixth community spotlight that he's made, like, in his spare time, above and beyond the things that, like, we actually hire him to do. And he's got five in the can. There's a whole bunch. And it's just such a cool gift that you bring to our community, Victor. I'm so stoked you're a part of all this. I got to write him a letter recently for an American visa and stuff, because we've been working together now and he got to go. And so it's been really great, man. I'm really stoked you're a part of this community. Thank you very much, bro. Welcome to Vancouver AI Meetup number 16. You are the Vancouver AI community. I am going to kick this thing off in the right way by welcoming my friend Gabriel George Sr. from the Slay With Tooth Nation to come give us a little welcome and some words.
Hello.
Can you hang out for just one sec? Okay. I just wanted to say a couple things. That's a new song I haven't heard from you before. That's really special, man. That's pretty cool. Thanks. And your voice sounds amazing in this round room. That was no mic. Your drum, that's pretty incredible. Those of you who have been coming here for a while know that Gabriel and then his cousin Damien and our buddy Johnny Williams have been taking us on a story. They've been sharing us some stories and they connect. Damien's family, parts of his family, he told us last month lived here, right here. Why this building is the shape that it is, it's a Coast Salish woven hat. And this is native land right here. And so I appreciate you sharing the stories that you have been. Damien's coming next month. I hear maybe you might be coming too and doing something together, which is pretty exciting. This guy's a big man in his community, has a lot of responsibilities for other ceremonies and things. And so, dude, I appreciate you coming, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Up next, we got Patrick Penfather. We've had an exciting thing happen. Penfather and I have been collaborating for a while, but he's going to come up and talk about this BC Studies research that was published last week about y'all.
Thank you, Chris. So great to be here again. A lot of my fond memories of last year has been people that I've met here. And I wanted to share that because that's what motivated me to collaborate with Chris and David Gartner from CEDAR, which is a relational technology cluster at UBC, in order to write about building a grassroots AI community, a practice. A Vancouver-centric use case. All right, so it really is an easy read. Here you go, Sean, have a read. You can probably finish it off by the time I'm done. Cool, thank you. So in the book I talk about, and we talk about, the importance of building a grassroots community and kind of some of the mechanics of how to do that. So what I would love from all of you is your opinion on that. Like, how do we sustain this type of community And what are the essential ingredients, if you'd like, in terms of like, how do we, like, what is going to compel you to come back? And thanks again to Gabriel George for mentioning values, because it's important to understand that as we all dive into this technology with all the known unknowns and unknown unknowns of where it's going to go, we need to actually be centered in our own values. But I also believe we need to rely on others to remind us of what those values are, because we are a community. And as we start to build this technology, we are not individual lone wolves. And if you are, cool. And talk with people, because it's always better to belong to a pack. So I'm going to end it there. And thank you to Chris as well for this event, these meetups, right?
Thanks, Patrick. Thank you for including us all in your research. A lot of you guys know I'm doing work with government and other kind of industry nonprofits to legitimize and fund this thing, as well as to bring about the creative industries AI accelerator of our dreams and stuff. And this type of stuff really opens doors and gets us called back when we're making the claims about who we are and what's going on right here. So thanks for including us in that for sure, man. Some of the things we talked about in there were like obsessive documentation was one of the pillars. And we got folks like Michelle Diamond around here. Where's Michelle? Like, this woman is like the best photographer of these types of things in the city. And like this, if she's here, this is the best thing going on tonight, or that someone else would have hired her to be somewhere else. Kevin Friel started up our YouTube channel with, we've been starting to pump out really high end like keynotes. These talks that happen up here, and in so much as they're valuable to us, they're even more valuable if we get share them out with the world. And gosh, it takes a lot of energy to get all this stuff together. So we might as well put it down on the permanent record and stuff and leave a little breadcrumb trail of where we've been. And the venue here, like that was another, this used to be in my studio for a year. Now it's here for a year. Sometimes our events are in like restaurants or commercial spaces or bars or different things, but it just doesn't feel exactly like home. And it doesn't allow you to kind of like move in and make it your own in the way and give us a sense of place. I think that's amplified by the fact that we've been on this journey about this land and the buildings that are being built there, and our Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh brothers and sisters have been coming around sharing their story with us. So that's a part of it as well. Anyway, read the article. It's not just fluff. It's academic research. Okay, community announcement section. So we're going to churn through this one, but there's a few people who know you're coming up here. Hey, what's up, Alexis? Nice to see you. Why don't I get started with a Schwartzman or Riv? Riv, you here? Riv and Matthew Schwartzman started up the Surrey AI Meetup Group, a spinoff of this. They just had their second event. It was awesome. The Surrey Economic Development Commission bought tickets and showed up and was like, I heard there's an AI community forming here at event number two. I'm proud of you, bro. Just give a quick 1-2 about what's what and invite people to the next event.
Yeah, thank you, bro. So the last event, second event, was incredible. We did a couple different things. And one of those is that I really loved part of it is we did an interactive games with AI and what's real and what's AI. And it was something that was really engaging and unique. And it's a small crowd right now. We have about 15 every month right now, and I'm hoping to grow that for the next one. So please, everyone here, come to the next one. That'd be awesome. We do it at the Legion building in South Surrey at Legion number 8. Right now, they have incredible food, incredible drinks there. And it's been just really exciting. I'm really happy for the next chapter. And with Chris's support, it's been best.
It's smaller, so we actually get to have a circle and go around, talk about stuff and share. It's pretty awesome. Actually, that's my favorite part.
Yeah. Yeah, that part is pretty awesome. It's really great to really connect with everyone and get in that depth. Can I take 30 seconds about the Lapu Lapu Day Festival?
Yeah. And I'm
going to
follow that up. Yes.
Okay. So I am really heavily involved in the Filipino community, and what was happened recently at the Lapu Lapu Day Festival was really tragic. And my wife is Filipina, and I have a Filipino son, obviously, half at least. Anyways, I'd just like to take 30 seconds, just silence, and just remember what happened. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for bringing it up, man, because it's actually on the agenda for this section. So I wanted to say something as well, which is we've been talking about a little bit on our group chat what happened. It's been a pretty hard week to be a Vancouverite, trying to make sense of it all. And there's been a lot of interesting chat amongst us. But I've been looking for authentic ways to talk about it and express it as well for us as a community. And I came in here a couple of days ago to do some prep for this. And who do I run into at the front door? It was Sonny, the housekeeper, who I've been hanging out with for the last 6 months. And him and Gino are both Filipino. I've been having meals with them. They support our community. They clean up after us. And so I just want to let you know, there are Filipino members of this community too that were affected and stuff. And they're out there helping out tonight. You're going to see them around. Like, you're welcome to say hi to them if you're looking to connect with how you might be able to help or support or what they might need. Those will be guys that are in this community, they're in this building tonight that you could talk to as well. Also, Riv's got some stuff going on with his wife and stuff. So thanks for bringing it up, because something needed to be said, man. Yeah. Let's go with Vijaya and Madhavi. We got a couple folks here that are pulling together an AI ethics and governance conference. They're also connected with my buddy, Fergus Lindley Mota, who did the thing at WASC Center in December. So I just want new members of the community came last month. They've been participating, and I wanted you to come up and talk about the thing you're pulling together.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Yeah, hi, everyone. I'm my colleague here. She's Vijaya. So I really want to thank Gabriel and Patrick as well for mentioning about the values, what kind of values we need to align with. And AI is a huge thing. It can be a great monster. It can be a good monster, bad monster. So how do we really do that value alignment and the ethics part of it, the governance part of it? So Vijaya and I have planned a conference. It might be a mini conference. It can be a small summit, or it can be a huge conference, depending on the support we get. So that is planned for 24th of October, and it is AI and ethics and governance. So we are talking with Simon Fraser University. We're talking with some other partners in the government, with the Ministry of Citizen Services, who is responsible for the data and the governance part of it. This is where we are really looking for your insights, your inputs, and support as well. And I'll ask Vijaya to add.
Yeah, as she very nicely mentioned the monster aspect of it, we just want to highlight and start the dialogue. The dialogue has been around, but we want to take it further. So there is as an AI community, we need to talk about the values. As a speaker before us, I forget the name, Benfeather? Patrick. How he mentioned about the values, you want to keep the AI human-centric. It should be as a tool rather than it overtaking. So we forward that conversation in this conference. So we are looking forward to your support. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys being here and talking about what you got going on. So the theme is, if you're into the AI ethics and governance thing and you want to get more involved, talk to those guys that are pulling together something. But what we've been seeing happen over the last 6 months in this community is all sorts of things have sprung up. Not just the Surrey AI meetups, there's been the women's AI meetups, there's the Squamish AI meetup, Brian Hawkenstein. Do you have a date picked for your next one? Okay, cool. When you got a date, come take the mic. There's the Mind AI and Consciousness group. Loki, are you here? It's been meeting up 2 times already. It's an incredible group. There's 30 people in a private chat who are sharing really deep stuff about really like over the edge philosophy about mind, AI, and consciousness. I met a woman named Leah tonight who's doing a PhD at Oxford who wants to convene. Leah, do you want to say what you're doing real quick? Okay, Leah's pulling together, wants to talk to the people that are into AI and education, AI and pedagogy, guys like Prajwal, who built his AI tutoring system that was demoing out there. So there's all these cool little sub pockets forming. You're welcome to come to me. I'll help and support you as you can. I'll connect you with other people. I'll invite you up here to rock the mic and invite people to come connect with you. So that's what's going on. Did I miss anyone in the community announcements section before we move on? Holler at me. If you want to get into this section next month, holler at me beforehand. Carla, I forgot about you. Where's Carla from Vivo? Hi. This is Carla, the executive director of Vivo Media Arts, and I've been getting involved in this community in lots of ways. Total community badass as it comes to the new media, video, old media, all sorts of stuff. I just wanted to come let you invite people out to your next event and say what you've been up to.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I'm from Vivo. So as you may or may not know, Vivo is one of Canada's oldest artist-run center. It was founded in 1973. We have a vast archive of media art from across the Lower Mainland, Vancouver, Canada, the world. We have over 160,000 objects in our media archive. I love giving tours. So please come down to Vivo anytime, vivomediaarts.com. Our next exhibition opens May 15th. It's actually looking at internet traffic and what the cost of internet traffic is, not only from a power consumption, but also where do the chips come from? How are they mined? So please go to our website, join our newsletter. And one of the amazing things about being a part of this community is one of the dreams, one of my new dreams with Vivo is to build build a media hub where we'll have the machines so that any person can get access to this technology and to be able to train it for themselves. So one of the amazing things that Chris and being part of this community gave me was access to other resources of funding. So I've already applied or sent letters of interest to 4 funders to build this dream that, again, has completely accessible technology to every single person who wants it. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Some of you guys might remember Vanessa Sanchez's talk earlier this year that was about like AI funding for startups and stuff. Her and I, when we were working on that, put together like a whole like knowledge base in my Notion of like all the different levels of government resources, from federal, provincial, city ones, nonprofits, accelerators. And that's just like a website on our website or whatever. And so Carla got a hold of that, found like 4 useful things to apply to and as well up the trail of grabbing some money. So just point that out there. It's available. Ask me, ask Carla, ask on the group chat. Yeah. Okay. Sponsor time. So legit, guys, look at the nice building we're in. I know that everyone buys their own ticket, and I know it's not exactly cheap, but neither is an open bar and sushi in Vancouver anywhere you go. So I really appreciate you buying your tickets. It supports this. But also, you guys, we couldn't do this without the help of some other people. Rivals come in big, and we're going to talk about them later tonight. But Dimitri Schwartzman is one of our sponsors this year. We got the guys from Segev Law that have been helping us out with monthly cash payments. Marius, are you here? Is anyone from Segev here? We referred on a deal last month that I think worked out. And if that works out, we get to like double our sponsorship and make it go farther and stuff. So I think that happened. If you guys just need someone to talk to about intellectual property or whatever, let me introduce you to Marius or one of the Segev brothers. They specialize in like crypto, Web3, AI, video game companies in Vancouver. So they know our space and they're cool guys. They're contributors. Michelle Diamond, I would be remiss, like the tiny little gas money I give you to come, like you are a sponsor of this event. So thank you, Michelle, for being here. Thank you, Victor, all everyone who contributes to this. I really appreciate it. All right, on with the show. Up next, we have a seance provided by Meta Creation Lab. Philippe and his band are going to summon the spirits of their favorite dead composers. And what's up, man?
Good, good. Hello, everyone. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming. Yeah, we got to do some work at the Meta Creation Lab, and that resonates with what we just talked about on this very stage a minute ago. We've been developing a bunch of tools based on this idea of small data and model crafting. We noticed that artists don't really want to use big models trained on everyone else's data. They don't really want to upload their data online. They don't really want to learn how to program in Python to make some art with AI. And Californian for-profit AI is all about uploading the data and using big models. And if you look elsewhere, there's pretty much nothing. Because we're publicly funded at SFU at the Meta Creation Lab, we developed a bunch of tools. One of those type of tools that we worked on are musical agents. And so tonight, we're going to do a little preview, a drafty work-in-progress version of a performance we're going to premiere in Montreal at the Mutech Festival. It's a big festival at the end of August this year, and we just started preparing that show here. So on my right here, we have Kian, who is our drummer, and he's also a PhD student. And yes, we can clap if we want to. Kian is Canadian with Korean origin and doing his PhD on musical agents. And here we have Viji Amagi, who is joining us from Japan, living in Vancouver right now. And then on stage with us are going to be 2 musical agents, Massom and Aspire Muse. And then there's going to be Autolume doing the visuals with Touch Designer. And on the right, I just want to thank once more Kevin Pixel Wizards, who is really helping with everything. So we'll play for about 15 minutes, and then we'll take some Q's and A's if we have time. Chris will decide upon that. Cheers. So it's going to be experimental, noise, music, electroacoustic. And so take it as a sonic massage. Sometimes we talk about cinema for the ears.
Friends, we live at a time where new forms of expression are emerging right under our very eyes. And Philippe's lab offers all of us a portal into the edge of people using new tools and new robots, whole new forms of expression, man. This is wild, wild shit. Both Philippe and these guys and our buddy Lionel have been accepted into Mutech, this Montreal-based music and experimental art festival. This is the stuff that they're going to be showing there. So amazing that you come drop this stuff on us, guys. Thank you. Thank you so much. Do you want to say a couple things about what we're looking at, or you want to leave it as it is? What do you, in terms of them being a portal, all those demos out there, Carla, Philippe, and I sat in on Philippe's last class for his graduating students, and they showed us their final projects, and those were some of the best ones that were there. Thanks for doing all the work to coordinate getting that stuff out and for inviting Carla and I in to weigh in and give our opinions and feedback and stuff. It's amazing. Your participation in all this is incredible, bro. Get on up here, guys. Say a thing or two about your work. Pass it to the boss.
Come say something. Yeah. Anything you want. Just introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were you doing?
You didn't tell me about this. My name is Anayi. I'm from Japan. I moved to Vancouver 2 years ago, and this is the first performance I do in Vancouver. So this is a huge honor to be here and performing here today. Thank you, guys. Yeah.
Yeah, Namaki has been playing some amazing shows all over Japan and teaching some visual composition and things like that. So we're really happy to have him with you. Kian, do you want to say a few words?
I'm Kian, and I'm a PhD student of Philippe, and I was drumming and developing musical agent for this type of performance. I've been having a lot of fun. It has a lot of
time playing in Vancouver too?
Yes, I think actually, it's first time. Yeah, thank you. So Vancouver premiere, we leave it at that for tonight because we got an AV program.
That's perfect. I actually appreciate it because then I can get right on the mic for 1 minute without him knowing. Lionel, will you just pop up here for one quick sec? Lionel's in a MuTech lab right now, and I just was reading online about what you're building today. But would you just share a little about, like, 1 minute about what the lab is and what you're doing? This is the guy from the documentary
earlier. Thank you for letting me know you would pull me on stage, Chris. Thank you. Yeah, last time I was, one time in January, I was talking about AI energy consumption. And based on this, I started thinking about how can we try to approach this. And so there was the MuTech ultra-residency for AI ecology. So I submitted a project that was picked to build in AI energy counters for online tools or all AI tools around to aggregate information and start collecting information, simply of knowing what is the energy usage? Not to blame anybody, but also to help people guide to more ecological product, maybe.
Hey, thank you, Lionel. I lived in an off-the-grid cabin for a while on Galliano Island, and it was solar-powered, and it was only then that I started to truly understand my power consumption because I had to make trade-offs between whether I was going to charge my laptop tonight or run the coffee machine in the morning. And it's only through having that type of a framework, some ability to monitor it, that you can make any decisions at all about do you do one thing or another. We can't even count or have any visibility into that. Now, thank you for the work you're doing, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, now our hackathon, right? So out of this community emerged an idea to tell better stories around data. Andrew Reed came to me, he runs Rival Tech, and he was like, we do this amazing work for these biggest brands in the world. They spend huge amounts of money asking tens of thousands of people questions about all sorts of stuff, and then we get all this rich data back, and the whole industry puts it into PowerPoint presentations and bar charts and graphs, and like, it's the AI age, we must be able to do something more. So that was the seed of our idea. I want to welcome Dale and Julia from Rival Tech up here right now to talk a little bit about the hackathon. These guys are a couple of the judges. Brittany, are you in the room? Brittany was one of the judges as well. She'll be up here at various points. We're going to show you guys some of the best projects. We're going to give $2,500 to the winner of the first round. I'm so excited. This is so cool.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so this was all kind of the brainchild of our CEO, Andrew Reed. He started this company 8-9 years ago now with kind of the idea of moving market research into the future, bringing it onto people's phones, helping brands connect with their customers in a new way. And as Chris mentioned, a lot of the way that data is presented is pretty dull. It's not super engaging. We've really tried to push that forward with our platform and with our products. But I think this is the next wave of that. So really, we got some really cool submissions to this hackathon, and this is just the first of four of them. So hopefully more people in this room will get inspired by what today, and we'll be, giving away three more of these prizes. Thanks. Dale, you want to say anything?
I just encourage everybody, if you can, take a look at the submissions. We had 12 submissions. Five of them really stood out, and I was blown away by the kind of care and attention that went into the ideation process and the conceptualization of those thoughts into a deliverable. I think we're going to show a couple of those tonight.
After you guys are done talking, we're going to show the reels, and then Swati's going to give a demo, and then we're going to announce
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just a real privilege, guys, to be able to bring business into this context a little bit. We need this in the business community. We need exposure to this kind of creative energy and also cross-pollination with academia. It's just a really powerful connection opportunity. So it's a real privilege to be a part of this. And thank you for allowing us to talk to you and participate. So I'm going to hand this back over to you.
Okay, so we had about 60 registrants, and I think some of y'all dropped the ball, but that's okay. There are three more rounds, and whether you participated in this one or not, you are welcome to participate in subsequent ones. Whether you win this one or not, you are welcome to participate in subsequent ones. The topic of this round's questions and data set begun around is a hot dog, a sandwich. The age-old debate. My other favorite question was, is a bowl of cereal with milk soup? So I think a lot more people downloaded the data set than actually submitted. I think some people got stage fright. Don't be scared. It's free to enter. And you can lose in the sense that you don't win, but you can't lose, really. Yeah. What else did you want me to say here? Okay, great. I'm going to don my hot dog hat in the meantime.
Brittany's a really tough teacher. I was hoping for 5 submissions this first round. I wasn't sure. We just launched this thing out of nothing. There's no one ever seen any examples before. So I'm stoked. 12 freaking real projects got passed in by you guys. And I know there was a bunch more in the works. I guess maybe without further ado, let's roll a couple of the clips of a few of the, let's call them like the winner's circle. And then we're going to show you like our favorite project that didn't win and then the big winner. Yeah, let's rock and roll on the reel.
Why? Because structure wasn't enough. The hot dog was a flag eaten at sports arenas and backyard barbecues. It didn't matter how it was built. What mattered was what it meant. And then there was curry. Most rejected categorization entirely. It was its own thing, its own genre of food. Curry wasn't a liquid classification. It was a culinary philosophy, a memory system passed through steam. Even something as seemingly trivial as cereal caused division. Cold soup or sacred ritual. They weren't answering about milk and grain. They were answering about intention. And intention mattered. People wanted to believe that food was not just what, but what the creator meant it to be. Does mixing those two triangle slices of chaos and comfort that they used to call pizza make it a sandwich? Transformation without meaning is just mutation. In 2225, we no longer eat, we synthesize. But in 2025, they ate with history in their mouths. The data reveals not confusion, but conviction. Humans weren't failing to classify food, they were fighting to protect it. So when someone asks, "Is this a sandwich?" ask instead, "Whose story am I swallowing?"
Welcome to Vancouver. AI Foodie Debates Hackathon, sponsored by Rival Tech. In the first round, we will be debating whether hot dogs are sandwiches or not. 29% say yes, but that number climbs to 44% if the bun is torn into two pieces. As we can see, the question of food categorization is murky. What if we are dealing with a taco? 64% argue that a taco is never a sandwich, but 26% are willing to give the designation to a soft taco, and 6% to a hard shell taco. Pizza is a tricky one, but 80% say it is still a pizza, even if assembled like a sandwich. Does a sandwich need ingredients to qualify as a sandwich? The majority of respondents agree that at least 2 ingredients on top of bread are required to qualify as a sandwich. Now, we all agree open-faced sandwiches are sandwiches, but do we want them? The audience is quite neutral with a slight preference for closed sandwiches. Now, let's get into a bit of a slurpy topic. Is a curry a type of soup, or does it qualify as its own type of food? 63% are willing to call a curry a type of soup. What is important to us when deciding if something is a soup? consistency is key. Which begs the question, is milk with cereal a soup? 90% disagree. And to what degree does the intent of the chef matter when classifying foods as soups or sandwiches? The audience is split. Thanks for watching.
What is a sandwich? Is it bread? Is it filling? Is it intention? If you replace the meat, then the cheese, then the bread, is it still the same sandwich? This is the sandwich of Theseus. A hot dog, a taco, a crusty slice folded just so, a label, a lull, a lunch. Is a taco a sandwich? What happens when the bottom falls out? When the bun splits and you are left holding two truths in separate hands? If the bun rips in half, is it now a sandwich? They say the chef's intent matters, that a sandwich is born in the mind, not the mouth. But minds are sloppy. They spill. And what of the open-faced ones? Not wrapped, but held. Just exposed. You ordered certainty. You received vulnerability. You wanted structure. But I'm open-faced. I am not symmetrical. I'm not easy to hold. But I'm real. So what is a sandwich? A boundary, a belief, or just a dream with crust? I'm not whole, but I am enough.
That's amazing. Maybe this is the time for everyone who submitted a project to just come on up here for one quick sec and let everyone see who you are. If you submitted anything at all whatsoever to this data storytelling hackathon, would you just come up and like, Brian Hawkenstein? Yeah, there you go. Come on, guys. What's up, Michelle? Where's Liliana? Swathi, you can stay here. You're up next. Come right up in here. Feel the light on your face, guys. Come on up. Come on up. Yeah, yeah. We didn't expect to get a bunch of videos but that was like a pretty low-hanging fruit. Hey, right here, Seth, right here, school. Thanks a lot for participating, guys. Hey, Ubdav, what's up, man? Thank you so much. Pretty cool that you came out, showed up. Neti, hey, what's going on? Nice to see you. Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Pretty awesome. I'll give you guys probably a chance to talk later, but I just wanted you to let everyone see your faces. Please can come do the next one. So we started with Absurd just to get the juices flowing, but we've got one and I can't let the cat out of the bag. We're gonna tell you just like in half an hour what the next question set is, but we've been working on the question set. The data's going out. Brittany will fill you in. You guys can go. Thank you so much for participating in this thing. Swathi. This was my favorite project that didn't win, appeared on the top of a lot of judges' lists. So cool. I downloaded her GitHub code that night that I got the project in and tried to get the pipeline running for myself. Do you need like a stand or for me to hold your thing? Or what you want? You let me know. I'll be your stand. Okay. I just want to say, I downloaded her code. I ran it. It's awesome. We've got to collaborate on some other pipelines related to this stuff. Pretty super cool. Like I said, we're going to be running four of these. We've got the next question set worked out. We've got a couple in the pipeline. It's going to get pretty good. Yeah. No problem. Anyone got any questions about the data hackathon you want to shout out while we're getting the AV going? All right. Okay. Hit it.
All right. I'm super nervous. I've never really spoken in front of so many audience. So if I fumble, please ignore that. Hi, I'm Swathi. I am...
You might have to hold your mic at some point.
Okay, thanks. So maybe I'll just keep this stuff. Yeah, hi, I'm Swathi. And for this hackathon, I decided I did not want to do a static report. I did not want to do just a dashboard or just visualization. We have awesome participants who have submitted some cool stuff. So I'm like, okay, even I want to do something really creative. So is it going to be ridiculous if I use this entire survey responses and make a comic out of it? What if we live in a world where a hot dog is facing a trial because it's summoned that because it does not belong to a specific category, right? So I'm like, okay, this sounds maybe ridiculous, but super funny. I'm totally going to go for it. But thank you. Okay, sorry. So used the data analysis. So this is me diving into the data, doing all the boring stuff. Fun for me, but for many, it might be boring. So I'm like trying to understand what can I use for my storyline, right? Because I wanted all the character description. I wanted also like what the arguments of the trial and the courtroom drama is going to be from the data and the insights itself. So I'm like, okay, fine. But while majority people do not want to believe that hot dog is a sandwich, I'm like, oh, that sucks. I want the hot dog to be the hero of this character, right? So I want the hot dog to win. So I, as a data scientist slash lawyer working for this hot dog, I had to figure out. So this is our hot dog, right? Poor guy, he's summoned, and this doesn't look like me, but maybe the AI version of it. So she is gonna fight this case. Now, lawyer's job is not to tell the exact representation of the story, but to persuade the story in the way they wanna tell the story, and which is what all data is, right? If it's my story, it's gonna be my narrative of that story. So that's what I did. I figured out from the insights, what can I use to compel the judge to think that it should be a sandwich, right? And all these people need to believe it. So that's why, and now I did not just want to show it. Sorry, actually I was trying to do a video out of it. It was really tricky because I was trying to do all open source models and I did not want to burn all the cash in my, so obviously. So I thought, you know what, let's stick to the basics. And I built a pipeline where, like, after all the data insights are derived, there is a CSV, which is with like my entire storyline, and it has a list of prompts, my character description. You can change it to your liking. I put this CSV, this is the cool stuff. Like my favorite part of the project was the automated pipeline, which is what Chris liked as well. So I feed it and you just hit play button, and what you get output is, okay, sorry, this it's code. So you can give whatever you want in your CSV, and as an output, you get a comic novel. And people can read through it. There's a lot going on in the story. And now you can do, it made a lot of versions. There is my favorite version. If you are interested, the entire code is on my GitHub. It is free to use, clone it, feel inspired, make your own story. Maybe you want to show, like you have a story that you want to show to your kids, but they only like images. So you can just spit it out in a CSV and you will have a cool output of it. Okay, thank you.
Don't run away. That's amazing. It's really amazing. A pipeline is a series of steps that takes some data and moves it through a process, and you built one of those. First of all, she used all open source tools. So she's not using GPT or any of the online services. The only online thing you did was you rented a GPU in the cloud to do the processing because you didn't have a GPU locally. Yeah. So you're running local models or on Git Hugging Face or in that collab notebook you made. All open source models. She can put in a text file, runs the system, and then all those images are things that are being generated locally, but on a GPU on the cloud. It would be locally if you had one or whatever, but it's really an amazing pipeline, and it's the seed of something great. If you can see what I see, you'll get it. There's some genius in there. I'm so excited to collaborate with you on it more. It inspired me. I made one too based on her work, and we're going to get together maybe this weekend, I hope, and try to put them together or something like that. Congratulations. You were amazing, and I really... Hey, Dale and Julia and Brittany, will you guys come up here with me for a second? I'm really excited about this moment. I think it's just so cool that we've created a platform that brings in folks like Rival, that we've run our first hackathon, and that we get to give $2,500 to someone in the community. You look great.
Thanks. I feel great.
Swathi's project was awesome. A lot of those things we saw were really eye-opening, but there was one project that stood way out above the other ones, just in the way that it interacted with the whole thing. This guy built a platform, he built various experiments, he visualized things in different ways, he wrapped it all on a website, and the way he delivered it to us was like he was delivering a consulting software architecture project to a client. It was like impeccably documented, quite good work. Anything you guys want to say about this?
Anything? Just say a big thank you for the effort. It's not lost on us how much time it takes to pull this together. And so the effort is incredible. And it really does speak to this idea of community of practice, which I think is really critical and awesome.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say was it actually made the judging super easy. Brittany built the rubric. We used the rubric to score all the things. But then when we got together for the meeting, we were like, we put our top three on there. And there was one that was on the first place of all of the list, plus Andrew's. The five judges all had this one on top. So it was easy. And we adjourned 7 minutes after we started and was like, yeah. So Seth Garaskin, come on up, buddy.
I feel that this is potentially too big a moment for the hot dog cat. I'll just take this off for a second. It'll come back, I promise.
Congratulations.
We're going to invite you to say a few words after your thing runs, but I just wanted to take a moment and get a photo from Michelle Diamond with you with your big ass. This is a dream of mine, to give away a big ass check to a community member. Congratulations, brother. Yeah, slide right on in there. Sev's a big contributor to our community in lots of ways. Go find a place to stash your check. We can watch your video. I'll meet you back here in 3 minutes. Okay. All right. Cool. He's a big contributor to our community in lots of ways. He was one of the... He's the guy that before we had the core membership, he'd buy his ticket on the way home every month, which was just such a pat on my back that we had been doing good things. It was like he'd buy his ticket on his way home from this event every month. All right. Without further ado.
Hot dog, a sandwich. Let's find out. Understand why the question matters. Set the stage for the ultimate face-off. Play around with our advanced 3D model to understand the structural perspective on this question. Watch it transform into a sandwich. Then watch it transform back into a hot dog. Back into a sandwich, back into the hot dog. The structural examination enabled us to form the transformational theory and ask deep philosophical questions. We further obtained both cultural perspective and historical perspective. Then we took a combination of cultural and qualitative analysis, and we found that according to this criteria, hot dog is a controversial food. We don't know yet if hot dog is a sandwich. So we dove deep into the data. We even came up with our own controversy score based on 4 different categories, which determined that hot dog was the most controversial food. We then went and classified the survey respondents into different categories, such as sandwich traditionalist and sandwich expansionist. This pop-up right here enables you a further deep dive into the data broken down by different properties like gender and region, see the linguistic patterns, understand the controversy metrics, and get the classification perspective. Finally, after reviewing the key arguments of whether hot dog is a sandwich or not, we came to the verdict that hot dog is not a sandwich, based on qualitative analysis, cultural perspective, and data. However, it remains a highly controversial food. Our methodology was to spin up 3 agents on our orchestrator platform, 1 for quantitative analysis, 1 for natural language understanding, and 1 for data visualization to create this interactive website. And finally, I'd invite you to explore our classification chatbot, which enables you to classify your pictures into hot dog and sandwich, and watch this video for a surprise.
Cue up that rap video at the end, but it's definitely worth a watch. I did make a microsite with all the submissions in it and all the videos, which I'll share on the group chat later tonight. Congratulations, bro. It's so cool to see Orchestrator in action. I know you've been talking about it so much. I can't believe you got to do all that shit. You're crazy.
Yeah, thank you. It just shows what I find the models are really good at is understanding natural language understanding of data sets. So if you're doing any qualitative analysis of the data, you can run it through the language model. You can get some qualitative insights and combine the two and get something like this. Like, I didn't come up with this insights. It's the Orchestrator platform did. So just a few agents together. But besides that, I want to talk more about the kind of talent we have here. And as I'm working on this exercise and I'm meeting more and more people, I'm impressed with just the quality of builders that we have in the city. So the other day, I met Ovi a while back. And Ovi is actually, I'm going to talk about Ovi. I don't want to talk about myself. I want to talk about Ovi because he impressed me. And Ovi is like one of the global experts on converting sort of human movement and data into sound. So he has his Salonic app. He showed me he has his mobile app. And what it does is like you're able to take this app, move it around, and then converts it to the sound. So you can really create music based on all the data that you collect, your movements, your location, and so on. And it does it in real time. And Ovi and I, we went out for beers, and I didn't know Ovi was such a drinker, but he made me drink like 4 beers, and I don't know the last time I had 4 beers. We got pretty drunk,
And what I'm building with Orchestrator is essentially a control system for artificial general intelligence. And what Ovi has is a control system for music. So we're like, okay, let's figure out how to put all this together and let's invent something. So then we started talking about how does a conductor orchestrates a music with the orchestra, right? He has that baton and he goes, right? So it plays around. So we're like, okay, we can spin up a bunch of agents and start like orchestrating to put orchestra level music into his harmonica, right? And after a while, we had a few more beers and then we thought, what is the perfect control system for AGI, for artificial general intelligence? And we're thinking, is it a baton or is it a magic wand? So what we did is we invented the magic wand, and I think we have a real possibility seeing the magic wand come to life within our lifetime. So we can just go abracadabra.
Seb is such a sweet man, and that's such the spirit of the community that he comes up to give his, like, I win the game speech, and he talks about it. Ove, I loved your and Liliana's project, too. It's really good, and I'm glad you guys are connecting. Like, I know you had someone bail off your team at the end, didn't exactly get it to where you wanted to go, so I'm glad that it's pretty cool, man. Yeah, thanks, Seb. We're going to finish this night out, so I'm going to invite you to take a seat, but I want to get my picture taken with you in the big check later again, bro. Like I said, we're going to have one more minute at the end. We're going to tell you about the next data set. I encourage you guys to get involved. It's going to be super cool. All right, now's our keynote presentation. One of the main reasons I built this event is because I wanted to make an event that I really wanted to go to, a chance where I could hear the people that I wanted to hear and see from and just bring together the different disciplines that make up the things that I'm interested in. So this guy has captivated my imagination over the last while. He's a local. His name's Alan Pike, and he runs an organization called Forest Walk Labs. They build just delightfully human software around AI for teams and other peoples. He's a designer, he's a developer, he's a geek, he's an indie web guy. He's got a very unique perspective, and it was just a real pleasure to go down his rabbit hole like a month ago or so. We've had a call since then and connected, and so I invited him to come just like share a little bit of his perspectives. And so he's going to talk some tonight about design and the interfaces and stuff. And Alan, come on up, bro.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris. All right. I am indeed Alan Pike, and today I'm going to be talking a little about interfaces. I'm a developer, sometimes designer. I'm the co-founder of a startup called Forest Walk Labs here in Vancouver, where we're building delightful software for teams. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to talk about interfaces like this beautiful one that some of you are old enough to remember. These are the good days back when computers were terminals. You could type to them, and they would type back in this long scrolling list of characters, and it was amazing because it was so powerful, and it was so flexible, and you could do anything as long as you knew what to do, which most people didn't know what to do because it was just an input field. But for those of us who were captivated by it, it really excited the imagination and got the whole thing rolling until we could get to here, which was better because even though it wasn't always as flexible as the text-based interface, we were able to directly manipulate what we were looking at. And people who were new to the software were able to pick it up, they were able to see what they wanted to do, and they were able to learn it. And that was a huge improvement, and things have continued to improve since then. A couple years ago, things like got worse, where we got this amazing thing, the most impactful technology of the last decade for sure, of ChatGPT. But it was like a text field that you type, and then it was a scrolling list of text. And that was like really amazing and exciting and flexible and powerful, but also completely confounding to 90% of people. And this was a really great start, and it's kickstarted an entire shift in how we build software and how we build the world. But it's also really, again, just the beginning, just was, of what we can do with this stuff. And we've already started to see hints of the tools that we're using start to push the chat a little bit to the side. It was a great sort of prototype interface, but we see this is another example of ChatGPT. It has this canvas mode now. So if you ask it to co-author a document about otters and how cute they are, it'll stick the chat up in the corner and let you focus on the work that you're doing. But this is still really just the beginning of what we can do with these interfaces. And if you're up for it, I'd like to do just a quick tour of some of the post-chat interfaces that we can build using AI. So we're going to start with a really simple one, which is right click. You can just like click anywhere nowadays. And this is an example from a browser prototype called Daya, which is from the browser company with the AI-centric browser. And they imagine that you can just click anywhere or right click anywhere and get contextual, smart actions based on what you've interacted with. And this has been one of the really just front and center first places that those of us who are building software are putting these AI interactions in a place where you don't need to chat with a model. You can just say, hey, do something here with this. So that's pretty good, but it's far from the only place where our interface conventions that we've been used to are really changing. Another really big one is search. Anybody has used a search box, you have to type in exactly the phrase that you're looking for. That's actually not true anymore. And any search box, this is an email app called Superhuman, any search box is now going to and is increasingly allowing you to just type in what you're looking for, like the way a human would, because we're humans. And the computers previously allowed you had to actually literally type Air Canada flight notification, but if it said flight update instead of notification, it wouldn't find it. Like that was the way we just were taught to use computers. But that's not the way we talk to other humans. We say, just what are my flight details? Just please show me. And this right now is delightful and amazing and incredible when it works and the few applications that support it. But in the coming years, it's just going to be an assumption. This is the way we're going to expect, our users are going to expect this from our software, and they should, because this is just way better. Another thing we do a lot with computers is we pick things. There might be a list of options, of choices, and then we have to go into dropdowns and stuff. But that's actually not really necessary often anymore. This is another example from Superhuman. I'm scheduling an event here, choosing a date, but I shouldn't have to pick from a grid or exactly pick the number and pick the... No, I should just say next Thursday at 11 or the first Tuesday next month or when all my meetings are done tomorrow. There's another example of an interface that we've dealt with for computers pretty much since the Macintosh days that have seemed perfectly reasonable. But in the coming years, it's actually going to seem ridiculous when old software makes you like pick from a list, like these filters where you have to say, I want to see all of the items since this date and only show me the ones assigned to me. No, you just type and say, show me the ones from since this date and that are assigned to me, and it will just work that way if it's well-maintained modern software. Another pattern that we are very used to, but is actually going to seem really outdated if it stays in its old form, is spell check. These little underlines highlight your text, give you feedback on it if there's a typo. This is a design by one of my favorite designers, Maggie Appleton. And she envisions, why is it just spell check? Why not a devil's advocate that highlights your text and tells you why you're wrong? And maybe something that says, hey, cite your sources. Or something that's simplified. Why is this so complicated? Whatever it is that you want, you can recruit agents that actually give you, not in a chat interface, but right where your work is, highlight how it could be better in whatever ways that serve you. This is an example on a text document, but we're going to start to expect this wherever we're working, whatever we're working on, whether it's a spreadsheet or a design or anything. So those are some of the ways that the interfaces that we're really used to are going to change a lot. There's also interfaces that didn't really totally exist that are now going to start to become commonplace and already are. This is Apple Intelligence, which had some hits and misses, if any of you have used it. It's imperfect. But one of the things that's really powerful and useful of it is it can summarize the fire hose that is everyday life today. You can imagine, if you haven't seen it, getting a group chat where a whole bunch of people are all debating back and forth. You're at work, you're trying to focus on something, and you get a back and forth about, oh, are we going to do the picnic for dinner? It's maybe going to rain. You're trying to follow it. But what we're going to, what we should now expect from our software, if you're busy, that it just says, the gang argued about dinner and they rescheduled to next weekend. That's delightful today, and it's table stakes tomorrow, and it's what our software should do for us. And this goes way beyond this little kind of toy example of the group chat. Imagine a large organization, you have 1,000 people working in your company. Anyone who's worked at a big company knows that there's more information going by than you could ever even sip from the fire hose. But there's stuff in there that you could help you do your job, that could help you make better decisions, but it's just lost in the noise. And so this is a really big pattern. Again, it's not going to be chat-based. Certainly you could chat and ask, but it should come to you, the information that matters out of that fire hose, so you can ignore the rest of it when you're busy with something else. And so this is now starting to go into AI filling in for us in the things that we suck at, dealing with ridiculous amounts of information. Another thing that humans, a little bit of weaknesses are, sometimes we're a little messy. This is, I'm not sure if any of your designers, this is a Figma document, Photoshop, all of them are like this. We're supposed to name our layers, really, make it clear exactly what each piece is. Some people do that, and then other times you get a document like this, and you're trying to make a quick change, trying to understand it. And this is the way that a human would work, but like computers now can just, you click a button and they rename them. And this is not a mock-up of some crazy idea. This literally is just in Figma now. You just click on layers. If you have a pro account, you click on a thing that's messy and you say, rename the layers, and it cleans it up. It's a game changer. And this is something that is such a perfect application of this. It's not chatting with a thing and saying, please clean this up. It's just right in line. We're doing the messy work that we messy humans do, and the computers can come along and help clean it up and make it easier for other humans to understand what we're doing. And that, I really love that. Another thing that we struggle with sometimes as humans is the blank canvas, big intimidating empty presentation. What should I type here? And so one of the patterns we're starting to see a lot of, this is another example from Figma, is get me started. You can just click now and you say, give me a first draft. And at least so far, I wouldn't say the first draft is great. It's not amazing, but it makes the canvas not be blank. And at least the way my mind works is as soon as there's a bad thing there, I'm like, oh, I got to fix this. Oh, okay, no, actually, no, that should be on the bottom. And then you're moving. And so this is another one of those things. Of course, you could have a chat about what it should be, but really just anything sometimes is enough to get you started. And this is going to have a profound impact and is already starting to have a profound impact on software onboarding. You're getting into using something that's complicated. You've never used it before. Now, we can have all these affordances, and we should have all these affordances in what we're building to make it easy to get moving. As we get a bit further afield from our text-to-text realm, of course, we have voice, which if anyone hasn't used the ChatGPT advanced voice mode, you should definitely try it. It is delightful and terrifying and delightful. And in its basic form, it's very similar to you type to the thing and it types back. You say some stuff, it says stuff back. But something that's really profound and is just now starting to work its way into our software is that humans, actually, we can talk and point at the same time. And the AI can do that too. And so if I'm looking at a website like this guy's website here, I might be like, I don't know, purple, and what is going on with this header? And if I'm chatting, I have to actually say, okay, so there's the purple lines, type the purple lines and what's going on, but I can just wiggle my cursor and I can say, why is this like this? How do we make this better? And the AI can say, got it, and then actually start showing me the code, or it can respond in line. So that's another example of post-chat, or it's a superset of chat. The next to last is one that's dear to my heart, and this is what I call doing the next obvious thing. This is a really basic example from Grammarly, where I've made this typo, and it's, you can press tab for me to fix it, because that's probably the obvious thing. And this is, there's so many applications of this. Once you really get into your brain, if you've used like the new advanced coding tools like Cursor and seen, especially if you're working in a language that they understand well, like the way that you can just start making a change and it's immediately, oh, obviously you're doing this. Just press tab and I will keep, oh, I'm renaming these things to organize this way. And it's, no, I can see what you're doing, tab, and it's done. It's so powerful. It makes all your rest of your software feel broken. You go into Microsoft Excel and you name a title like yearly total. And then it's obviously, I should just press tab and then the yearly total fills in. It's just a completely mechanical thing. I've already told the computer, literally, this is what I'm going to do. It's capable of doing it. It just takes a little bit of work for us programmers to wire it in, and Microsoft moves slower than a startup. But this is coming for so much of our software, and it is going to be so delightful that we're going to be able to spend more and more of our time doing the creative part, where we decide this is what I want to see. And then the computer can just be like, oh, clearly this is the direction we're going. I'll take that busy work out. Finally, there's this one thing that we've been talking about as an industry since the very dawn of LLMs, GPT-2. And I don't know exactly what to think of it, but I have to address it, which is we can now generate a completely custom UI exactly for you that is unique to you in the moment right now a pop-up that's exactly made by AI. This is not science fiction in terms of feasibility. I can totally code this up later tonight as a thing that just generates every modal and pop-up and dialogue and navigation could be totally generated by an LLM. The thing that's really gnarly, other than it's a little slow right now if you do this, the thing that's really gnarly is this is either the complete future of user interfaces and that all the stuff I just talked about, the computers will just generate it for us and then my job as like an interface programmer and startup person changes a lot. Or this is completely deranged and will confuse everyone and be impossible to actually get working. And no one seems to agree, but you can imagine that if your interface is generated every time you click on anything, it makes up a new interface that's quote unquote perfect for you. That's maybe a little bit confusing when you're trying to explain to someone, oh yeah, just click here and, oh, actually you don't have that button. Oh, what's on the top? Or, oh, mine scrolls sideways. And so this is like either a complete galaxy brain or the guy on the other side of the chart. I'm not sure yet. My point with all of this is not that chat is dead or anything like that, but that we're at the beginning of a really incredible generation of software and products and experiences that when we think of AI, we might often think of this chat experience, which isn't going away, but there is so much more to come. And hopefully I have inspired some of you to maybe build some of it. Thank you.
Oh yeah, I want one of those too. Thank you, Alan. That was very eye-opening, man. And it's like direct hit for the stuff I'm interested in. Let's step up over here into the light a little bit more. Okay, we got a little bit of time for question and answers. Yeah, Misha. Yeah, I guess not more obvious. It's like, with what you've just demonstrated, holler it out. With what you just demonstrated, how much of that are you implementing in your day-to-day work with clients?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're a product company. And so everything that I just showed is on the table. And one of the things that we do and go back and forth, we're early stage. We don't even have revenue yet, right? So we're building, we're exploring. But one of the things that's like the joy and the terror of being an early stage startup builder in 2025 is going back and forth into, we'll be talking about a problem like just yesterday, the day before, I was trying to excise the chat interface from one of the products we're working on. And I'm like trying to hide it and remove it and coming up with all these interesting patterns. And of course, because I'm so excited about this and because we could maybe stumble on the next big thing, you tend to get pulled down the hole of, no, let's do something novel. Let's do something new. And then you realize you're like 3 days into maybe this should just be a chat thing. This part of, we're applying some of these. Some of them are on our big board of things to try to not get sucked into until the product gets there ourselves, but I want to build them all.
I have a not exactly question, but maybe a provocation. So on your like little question at the end about, so is this the actual future where interfaces are built in real time based on our exact needs, or is this actually just a pipe dream and how could you navigate someone else around an interface if theirs look completely different than yours? I think that is probably an artifact of the world we live in now, that desire for the ability to tell somebody how an app works, because the reason why these things would be reinventing themselves on the fly is so that there was no confusion exactly about how to do the function that you're trying to do. It's not like you have to go under 4 drop-down toggle menus to find the crop function or something like that. It's just right where it needs to be, a la your talk about like the next obvious thing or something like that. So my vote is on the probably on the fly, made up as we're using them, personalized interfaces, probably.
Yeah, that would be more fun than the other thing. If you've ever interacted with an enterprise IT department, they would be horrified that we're even pretending to let software do this. I don't know. I love the change is exciting to me, so.
Nils, shout it out.
Yeah, so I have a question. We've been experimenting with pockets of generated software as you use it. As far as well, and I was wondering from more of the deployment perspective, as it generates the software, like adding a self-testing pipeline because it's completely new software every time. Like from a deployment perspective, this generates software as you go within pockets of your bigger application. Can you talk a little bit about how you guys might be approaching that idea?
Yeah, so you've hit on like possibly the most complicated and difficult and powerful thing in building all of this stuff, which is testing. How we do automated testing for software that is different every time you use it is like the pain and the joy of this, in that the teams that are building the most successful, if you talk to people who work at Harvey, which is like one of the companies that's on the forefront of applying legal, which as you can imagine, like legal is kind of needs to be right. They are obsessed with these evaluations, with these suites of things that are testing all these different minute things. So they make a change, a new model comes out, they change something in the prompt, any part of the system that they can have some confidence that they've actually made it better, not just at the one thing that they're testing, but that they are trying as a human, but that there's 100 cases, 10,000 cases that they are automatically testing. That's just a way of saying yes. And I can tell you more after if you like.
The heart of the matter, though, too, around like testing and stuff. So when I've been doing some vibe coding and making apps, and then I obviously inevitably build for 3 days and then I'm facing 5 days of debugging because this thing built it out of control. And so I've been spending some time with Stev asking him about some stuff. And he showed me some just mental frameworks for building testing into the thing where you're like telling it to deploy a function, but you're also deploying tests at the same time and telling it to run itself through the test until it passes before putting the code into your software or something like that. So for those of you who are like getting into vibe coding out there, this whole thing around like building testing frameworks right from the beginning is the way to make it so your software actually works and is deployable. We'll probably get back there. One sec.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That was a great survey of those AI-driven new interfaces. What about standardization? The thing with tools is that Miller Puckett is really good at explaining that he's a violin player and he invented programming languages. And he was like, if the violin changed every 6 months, no one would be able to play the violin. It takes time to be good with our tools, yeah? And with AI, the models change underneath you. The interface change in front of you. So who is ever going to be a master of those tools? And how do we do to now standardize in that forever moving world?
Yeah, so I think the core of the question, and this stuff is moving so fast, how do any of us get good at it? And a big part of it is this thing that we mentioned of these tests and evals. So if you are just exploring and trial and error, finding the best way to get results from a certain model, that's a really fragile thing. The model gets maybe better on average, but breaks your hack. And a common thing is if you look at prompts from 2 years ago, a lot of them would be like, all caps, your children will be imprisoned if you don't do this thing, okay, GPT-3. And that stuff like doesn't make as much difference anymore and maybe actually makes it angstier, weird, or have unexpected effects. And so it's these evals, they're not the complete solution to everything, but they're a huge part of what does it mean to be better at using these tools as an organization or a product or a team or an experiment is your ability to actually assess any given change, including models that are supposed to be better, but are maybe worse for your thing. So that's definitely part of it.
Damn, dude, you're
dropping knowledge
tonight, bro. Wes. Okay. Hi. Just wondering, like, what are your top three favorite models right now and why? And for what use cases?
Yeah, you got to have this question with people because it changes like every 30 seconds. Claude 3.7 Sonnet thinking with lots of thinking applied in Cursor is the model I use the most right now because I'm doing a lot of coding and building, and it's a little bit expensive, but way less expensive than I am. And so it's been really good for me, at least for what I've been doing, which is building web applications for teams. The O3 thinking model is like my go-to. This is maybe not super galaxy brain thought. It's just like the biggest model right now that you can get to think really hard on something. And I'm using that especially when I have a researchy question. You can also use the deep research. But one of the things in this talk, I was trying to get a citation. I was like, I remembered this actually fell off the talk list, but I was like in Office, Microsoft Office, didn't they do a thing where it changed the toolbar to only show you the stuff that you use, but then people hated it because then it was different for everybody. And then I searched that in like the web and it was like, is it that? And then O3 was able to be like, actually, here's a quote from one of the senior people, multiple quotes from senior people at Microsoft at the time about the problems that they had. And so that would be my other one. And then GPT-4.1, which is replaced for GPT-4.0 for API usage, is like the default workhorse we use for the application itself is doing stuff. That's just our go-to, mostly because it's just the ergonomics around the APIs and stuff are really good for startup prototyping.
Give a little shout out for the GPT Image 1 API model that dropped a week ago. GPT just changed the way they deal with images and they just gave us access to the API a week ago. If you haven't fucked with it, it's amazing. Definitely check it out. Jai.
You're talking about the model specifically? Yeah. So the question is, as a product builder, how do you differentiate yourself given that there's 9 billion other startups all building AI startups that all, how do you tell them apart? And it's really hard. And if you think about it too much, it will destroy your soul because Because if you look, you'll find some Y Combinator startup that they're like high flying something or other, and it looks like they're doing something similar to you. And at the end of the day, I talk about this a lot. I'll try to keep it short. So if you spend too much of your attention on your competitors, especially in a really rapid changing world like this, you will always find a reason to do nothing, to always just not build, because there's always some reason you can convince yourself why you're going to get creamed by some Andreessen Horowitz funded blah, blah, blah. And sometimes that is true. But when you're doing something, especially early stage, the one like North Star that I think time and time again successful founders will tell you helps is just listen to your customers. So if your customers are telling you, we're using this thing already, and I'll be super transparent, we already pivoted once for that reason. We were building something, it was cool, it was in this testing thing that I was going on about, and then we were talking to all these customers, and our customers started saying, we're actually using this other thing. And we tried that thing, and we're like, oh man, that's our whole roadmap in a startup, and then they have $20 million in the bank, and all these logos, time to pivot, right? And then we could be like, okay, I guess we're done, but it's okay, we have 99 other ideas, and we're learning about those ideas from the customers. And all the noise and the fake startups that are actually internally imploding and so they're never going to actually launch or anything, all of those don't show up when you talk to customers. So that's a short version of it for me.
Shang, I'm glad to see your hand up, bro.
Sure. It turns out they work that way. It's because that's what people want. They want to be told they're right. And they're these sycophantic things. My most valuable AI bot that I've built is the harsh critic bot. I have embraced the tough love of AI. And so I've built one that challenges my assumptions, looks for my blind spots, and fucking takes me over the rails on any particular idea, poking every hole in it. So it's, and these coding ones that are set up for tabbing your way through, they're not just like a dumb GPT out of the box. This is like a highly, he was talking about, it knows the language that you're coding in right there. It realizes what's going on and stuff. And it's about like building purpose-built tools. You wouldn't sit down with just anybody and consider them a psychologist. And I wouldn't be taking advice about your mental health from GPT without configuring it properly first. It might tell you whatever you want to hear.
Yeah, I agree with that. The two things I would say is Claude is easier to convince it to be critical of you, the GPT-4o in particular, and they had to roll back an update because it got too much. They were telling people like, oh, I think that might be the Prophet Muhammad. And then it's, oh man, that's amazing. We should tell everyone. And it's like, no, this is horrible. Sound the alarm. And so they've rolled that back. But like in terms of we're building products, thankfully, we don't have the bad incentives as a product builder that GPT has of trying to build this one thing for everyone. It's a consumer product. They're the first like modern consumer product that going to $1 trillion according to them or whatever. And so they have a totally different set of incentives. If you're building a tool for work and your users now, sometimes it can be even people doing their work sometimes just want to be left alone. They're just, can I just finish this and go home? But in general, when you're doing work, then quality matters a lot more. And so to Chris's point, these models that are at least the current generation models that are doing the next obvious thing completion, a lot of them are like relatively small, relatively fast, fine-tuned models from something called a BERT style model, which is a given examples of good completions that have nothing to do with convincing you that you're great. And then obviously one of the things that can be in that completion is a flag. And so in our cursor rules that we basically are instructing to the AI when we're working, say, has a whole bunch of stuff, including all caps, ask me questions, criticize the stop if you're not sure, because in their prompt, it says, keep going until you're done. And our prompt says, ignore that, stop if you're not sure, don't just type stuff. So it can be done. I think it's going to get easier with future generations of models that are more steerable.
How delightful is Mr. Alan Pike here? Sev, if I didn't notice your hand, and if I ignored you after you just won the hackathon, I'd be a dick. So I'm trying to move on. But Sev, what's your question, sir? like a magic wand.
Yeah, if I can spend more time at the park, that's good. I think that, just like really briefly, that we're always going to have things that we want to communicate with computers about, and that a lot of the ideas when I present this thing about generated interfaces or voice-only interfaces or heads-up displays and all this kind of stuff, one of the things that often is a kind of a limiter on that is at the end of the day, we sometimes do have complicated things we want to express. We want to express them to other humans through computers. We want to express it to the computer or the agent. So I think there's always going to be a world where we have interfaces and probably actually fairly sophisticated ones. But if we could spend less time on computers, that's probably good too.
I really appreciate it, bro.
Okay, we're getting close to the end.
It's Web Summit Vancouver month starting tomorrow, I think, May. And we're having a meetup here on the 28th, and we're inviting the world in. There's 10 companies in our community that are part of the Web Summit Alpha program. Dean Shev and Darren sitting here in the front. Yeah, man. You got upgraded to the beta program. You made it through the next gate. Good job appeasing the gatekeeper, sir. No, legit, we got 10 startups on the trade show floor. They're going to come give a report back from the floor at the next meetup. We got a bunch of international awesome people that are going to grace the stage and share with us. But I really want to show up and represent what we're all about. So we're going to do some extra fun stuff next month. Grab your ticket whenever. The next month after that, so that's on May 28th. Next month after that, June 25th, we got one going on here. Want to make sure you guys know about that. If you want to speak or demo, send me an email. We got some forms and stuff. About 50 people in this room have bought an annual membership. They just have bought an early bird price for a year, and they get a member number and some perks, private channel. It really supports us. It really helps us out. In so much as that academic research that Penfather talks about adds credibility to us, when I walk into the JEDI's office, the Minister of Jobs, Economic Development and Innovation, and I say that we have grown from 12 paying annual members to 50, and that we have 200 people show up, they really start paying attention. So if you want to be a part of something bigger and really just put your money where your mouth is, join the annual member program. It's actually a cost savings over just even buying an early bird ticket every month. Thanks for those who have done that already. All right, Brittany, come on up. So we've been going through in Canada here a time of defining who we are. National identity crisis, if you will, from being asked to become a 51st state, going through an election, all this other kind of stuff. And we've decided to use the next round of the Data Storytelling Hackathon to provide a little bit of data about this whole identity crisis that we're going through. What does it mean to be Canadian? Who are we now? Who do we want to become? I just want to invite Brittany back to talk a little bit about the question set and the dates, the key dates when people are going to be getting things. And I think you have a couple of prizes to give out as well.
I do. Okay, so I don't do it yet, but Dale and Julie are going to come back on stage. But first, the next hackathon, we're all very excited. Just to wrap this one up, though, I don't think Darby is in this room, who was the Dr. Virex, the very first of the videos that we saw. Darby's not in this room. Confirmed. Great. Okay. In that case, I have, look, next month or 2 months from now, you'll see me in a horrifying foam Canada flag. But for now, I got a bunch of kitschy little prizes that were themed with this hackathon round's theme. And so for the first two, which are Kellogg's flavored lip balms, is a bowl of cereal a soup? Could I get Steve Jones and Brian Hockenstein up here, please?
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And there you are. Enjoy. Swathi. With the beautiful bowl of cereal candle, there are actual Fruity Pebbles. Is that a cereal? The Flintstones one. That's the one. And there you are. And of course, Sev. Is a hot dog a sandwich if it's a candle? Sev, please come collect your hot dog candle. And with that, Julia and Dale, please come up here too. Yep. Okay, so the next round, the hat comes off. The next round are Canada-themed questions. What does it mean to be a Canadian? Do you want to? We all know that Trump threatened, offered to make us the 51st state. And so Julia has done the hard work of coming up with the set of questions. I would ask you to speak to them just a little bit for 30 seconds.
Okay, so yeah, just so you all understand where this data is coming from, I think maybe we should have mentioned that before as well. You may have heard of Angus Reid. He has a panel of thousands of Canadians. You probably see in the news all the time. An Angus Reid poll said 45% of Canadians feel this way. So he's a pollster and a researcher going way back. So the data is actually coming from that panel. So for this one, we're going to be talking to 1,000 Canadians. It'll be balanced across the country. This set of questions that actually all three of us have been going back and forth on this week, as you mentioned, are all about Canadian identity. What does it mean to be a Canadian? What are the words that come to mind? What are your fears for the future? What are your hopes for the future? Very curious to see what the responses are. And if you sign up, you get access to all of that data, which will be available by the end of next week. And I don't know the dates, but yeah.
Key dates before Chris rips this mic out of my hand. The due date is the middle Wednesday of June, 2 weeks before the meetup, which means we will be announcing the winner of the Canadian-themed hackathon right before Canada Day. How fun.
Go to hackathon.bc-ai.net if you want to be a part of the next one. Brittany's onboarding everybody, getting them into the program. Just send in a message. Say you want the data when it comes out, even to just have a look, participate, throw your name in the hat. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right. We going to wrap this thing up proper or what, Kushal? You ready to roll? Is it good night or what? Thank you guys so much for coming to this meetup, for being a part of this community. I'm just going to invite my buddy Kushal up here to just say whatever's on his mind as we part. Might pick a fight, but I think he's in a good mood. I think he's in a good mood these days.
I am in a very good mood.
What's up, Kushal? What's on your mind, bro?
All right, yeah. This is ridiculous. I think now we're just being funny. Yeah. I have nothing really to rant about, honestly. I am in a good mood. Maybe if I could talk about something, actually. Is something positive. Is I have been, in the last while, like a month plus and so on, completely, let's say, what's the word for it? Detoxing, if you will, of all closed source proprietary shit completely. And so I am using the DeepSeek V3.0.324. Yeah, detox. Is that the word? Yeah. So I'm using completely everything I can that is not proprietary and closed as possible, as much as possible.
You're going to be really proud of me.
Okay, go on.
I bought a new PC with a GPU last week, and I decided not to run a single thing on it that's not open source.
That's brilliant. So can all of you, and you can do what Swati did, which is use online servers. I watched Swati do her project, and I saw her going from GPT image gen to be like, you know what? I could do better. I could do open source. I could control the character's looks. And I was like, yes, you can. And yeah, all you have to do is get a server on Runpod or any of these things. And just one thing you're angry about. And all right, let me get it. No, honestly, I think nothing is pissing me off because Qwen 3 just came out. This is another Chinese model just yesterday or today. And again, open source. And I've been building with everything. Yeah, it truly is. Yeah, I mean, I think he's trying to taunt me. This was Llama 4 came out of Meta, which is also open source, but something went wrong and they apparently produced a model that was supposed to be like the best model ever on open source, and it ended up being actually pretty ridiculous in the actual usage. But the fact of the matter is they put it out openly. Good for them. I honestly just want to say that I think Chris is putting a lot of faith in me and having something to be angry about all the time. But truly, I am so happy to just see, especially today's projects. Because what did you do with the hackathon? You got everyone to start playing with these technologies on their computers, have a money prize. So I saw some of the people that involved, like I saw people doing stuff with models, some of them open source. And it just builds education. If you know about it, now you know how to talk about it. Now you can educate your peers. And that's about it, truly. Nothing to rant about. I hope I can educate in the future.
Thank you, Rival, for sponsoring that. Hey, Kushal is a big member of this community. He gives a great critical voice. And we've made it a tradition to close this thing out ranting. And I'm so happy that you're happy.
Yeah.
Ed Kennedy's not here tonight because he's still packing his house. But he leaves for Vietnam tomorrow. He's a big member of this community. We made a cake over there for him. Bar's open for 45 more minutes. Morten, it's so nice to see you. I didn't get a chance to say hi. Morten Hendrickson is here. You're talking at this thing soon, just so you know. Okay. Yeah. Class adjourned. Enjoy some cake. Hit the bar. Thanks for coming.